Before Srila Prabhupada, in a gathering of devotees in Prabhupada's room, Hansa Duda talked enthusiastically about the newly donated bus. Prabhupada asked to go for a ride. Rohini Kumar, this bus was so horrible. It was in terrible condition and rattling so much. It was on the verge of breaking down at any minute. The only seat on the bus was the driver's seat, so someone got a chair from the house for Swamiji to sit on. He sat in front like the captain of a ship. He was completely transcendental to the whole horrible situation. And I felt very bad. I thought, oh, Swamiji shouldn't have to ride in such a horrible bus. What began as a group of devotees taking their spiritual master on a short ride suddenly changed when, after going a block, Prabhupada began giving the driver directions. Go to the right, turn left, turn here, come here now. With the bus's engine coughing sporadically, the ride remained rough and rickety despite several men pooling their weight against the legs of the chair. But by following Prabhupada's directions, they soon arrived at the waterfront. Prabhupada said he had wanted to go to Commonwealth Pier, the first place he had come to America, when in September of 65, he had arrived from India aboard the Jalajuta. The boys marveled as Prabhupada continued to direct them to Commonwealth Pier. I first came here, Prabhupada said, as he walked along the pier with his disciples. I thought, I don't know why I have come here. The language is different, the idea is different. They are all after sense gratification. I don't know why I have come here. But now I've got some boys, and even if I'm not here, it will go on. As the devotees walked beside Prabhupada, trying to hear him speak, they could see the city skyline nearby. One large building was being torn down, and new ones were going up. So many strong buildings, Prabhupada said, being torn down and then rebuilt. There's no pleasure in it, neither in building nor in tearing down. Nobody is happy. It's like with a small child. He's happy to get a toy, and then he's happy to break it. But there's no real happiness. Just like the boy and girl, they come together in union, and then they separate, divorce. There's no real happiness in the union or in the separation. Real happiness is in union with Krishna and separation from Maya. But it is Maya that again and again causes this union and separation in the material world. Interesting point Prabhupada is making. We were having a discussion at the lodge last night. Various guidelines that people say they're acting. So one of the most cherished guidelines today is that you should be guided by your own experience. Everyone was thinking, yeah, this is a very good thing. Just be guided by your own experience. So then I began to point out to them, well, what is your experience? Your experience that your body is breaking down, getting sick. You know your body won't last, but still you're trying for happiness in this world. So even if you want to say that the highest thing is to be guided by your own experience, you're not guided by your own experience. As Shukadeva Goswami said, Hashyanda Pina Pashyati. Although sufficiently experienced, you do not see. Therefore, we do not accept experience as a guide or a teacher, because unaided by spiritual guide, even your own experience will teach you nothing. As they walked together under a steel bridge, Prabhupada pointed upward with a walking cane. Look, a sign under the bridge read, unalloyed steel. They have unalloyed steel, and we have unalloyed devotional service. What if people don't want to hear our message? Prabhupada asked. The people might not understand our message, but Krishna will be pleased, Prabhupada replied, and that is our mission. They thought Jesus Christ's mission was stopped. They killed him, but his mission was attained. He preached 3 years only with so many followers. He pleased Krishna. We must not be disappointed that no one is hearing Krishna consciousness. We will say it to the moon and stars in all directions. We will cry in the wilderness because Krishna is everywhere. We want to get a certificate from Krishna that this man has done something for me. Not popularity. If a pack of asses says you are good, what is that? We have to please Krishna's senses. He stood by the bus about to return. All religion is useless, he said, until we know that this world is useless. It is not wanted. That is real knowledge. And when you know this, then there's no attachment. And then immediately, no hankering and loss. But now they are hankering. I have no girlfriend. And then, I've lost my girlfriend. Vamadeva had trouble starting the engine. And even after he got it started, it stalled several times on the way back to Esther Street. When Prabhupada arrived at his house, he said, they should sell the bus. Such vehicles presented a bad public image. Having a bus was a good idea, but not a bus like that. So this is a very wonderful point by Prabhupada we can remember. All religion is useless until we know that this world is useless. Now, how many so-called religions do you find teaching their congregation that the world is useless? No, they teach that just be a little pious and you'll have a nice life in this world of sense gratification. This is the perverted understanding of dharma artha. First, but in the economic development, there should be religiosity. Even in the West, hundreds of years ago, the last century, people were thinking like that. You should be nice Christian and moral, and then you'll have a nice society, nice economic development. But then, as Prabhupada points out, they quickly realize we can have economic development in artha without dharma. So let's just rush right to the real conclusion, the economic development, and forget about everything else. And now they're quite proud. We can see. We've made wonderful, feverish, the more feverish, the more wonderful, wonderful, feverish economic development without religion. This is real advancement. Just like in Japan, people think that their society is superior because they have no religion. They say all over the world religion has caused wars, fighting, but in Japan we have no religion, and that's one of the secrets of our success. They say, what is the use of religion? Sometimes in your life you're going to feel beat down and defeated, and in those few moments, it's good to have some religious faith. But as soon as those moments pass, you gather your strength and you do away with such sentimental thinking. So this is the society of demons who throw out religion and simply want economic development. Now the Vedas, in their conclusion, condemn even dharma performed for artha. What to speak of persons who don't even want to follow the materialistic formula for peace and happiness in the world? They want artha, economic development, without dharma, material religion. So if dharma for artha is condemned, what to speak of a lifestyle of simply artha, economic development, without materialistic dharma? That's how low things have sunk.
Characteristics.
Again, Certainly. Yes, 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 yes. Who's? Go for my drug.
Go for my drug.
The cowherd damsels.
The cowherd damsels.
Be sure they speak. Let my mind be fixed upon Lord Sri Krishna, whose emotions and smiles of love attracted the damsels of Brajadam, the gopis. The damsels imitated the characteristic movements of the Lord after his disappearance from the Rasa dance. Purport. By intense ecstasy and loving service, the damsels of Brajabhumi attained qualitative oneness with the Lord by dancing with him on an equal level, embracing him in nuptial love, smiling at him in joke, and looking at him with a loving attitude. The relation of the Lord with Arjuna is undoubtedly praiseworthy. Praiseworthy for devotees like Vishnudev. But the relation of the gopis with the Lord is still more praiseworthy because of their still more purified loving service. By the grace of the Lord, Arjuna was fortunate enough to have the fraternal service of the Lord as chariot driver, but the Lord did not reward Arjuna with equal strength. The gopis, however, practically became one with the Lord by attainment of equal footing with the Lord. Bhishma's aspiration to remember the gopis is a prayer to have their mercy also at the last stage of his life. The Lord is satisfied more when his pure devotees are glorified. And therefore, Vishnudev has not only glorified the acts of Arjuna, his immediate object of attraction, but has also remembered the gopis who were endowed with unrivaled opportunities by rendering loving service to the Lord. The gopis' equality with the Lord should never be misunderstood to be like the Sayuj liberation of the impersonalists. The equality is one of perfect ecstasy where the differential conception is completely eradicated for the interests of the lover and the beloved become identical. Om Gyanachimanandasya Kananjanashalapaya Chachyo Militangena Tasmai Shri Gurudev Namaha. This is the scene of Bhishma Dev's departure from this world. As you all know, Bhishma Dev had the benediction that he could leave. He would not die until he wanted to do so. You might say, well then, he should never die. This is the attitude of materialists, that they think the perfection of life is if the material body drags on and on in this material world. A devotee, however, knows the perfection is devotional service. The devotee goes where Krishna wants him to go to render service. That determines the devotee's coming and goings. Comings and goings. So Bhishma Dev, he is fully participating in the plan of Lord Krishna. He's giving up his body in a way that is maximum service to the Lord. All the great sages from the whole universe are gathered around him. Yudhisthira is there to receive instruction how to govern. Krishna made it so that Yudhisthira would not even become consoled by Krishna. Krishna had to take him to Bhishma Dev. In this way, Krishna always tries to glorify his devotee. So Bhishma Dev is preparing to depart. And he's speaking these beautiful verses, remembering Krishna in various ways. Yesterday, or the day before, you heard Bhishma Dev wanting to remember the Lord on the battlefield. At the moment of death, that my ultimate attraction be to Sri Krishna, the personality of Godhead. I concentrate my mind upon the chariot driver of Arjuna, who stood with a whip in his right hand and a bridle rope in his left, who was very careful to give protection to Arjuna's chariot by all means. Those who saw him on the battlefield of Kurukshetra attained their original forms after death. There were several verses in which Bhishma Dev was remembering the whole battlefield of Kurukshetra. Now he's remembering Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan. He'll remember Krishna's pastimes in Hastinapur at the Rajasuya Yajna. All these memories are coming to him at the time of death, and Krishna is right there for Vishvadeva to fix his vision on the lotus face of the Lord. This is the highest fortune. Vishvadeva is showing the proper way to leave the body. Because of his intense devotional service and dependency on the Lord, he's qualified, he's able to remember Krishna so dramatically, so profoundly at the critical moment of giving up the body. He's saying, let my mind be fixed upon Lord Sri Krishna, whose motions and smiles of love attracted the damsels of Vrindavan, the gopis. The damsels imitated the characteristic movements of the Lord after his disappearance from the Rasa dance. You may notice the Sanskrit in this verse is extraordinarily poetic. That is the nature of Srimad Bhagavatam. It is the height of art, science, culture, and philosophy. It is not simply some Hindu mythological text. This is what the mundane scholars think, that these Puranas, they're just assorted collections of Hindu legends and myths. And so many gods are presented. The mundane mind, even the scholar, cannot find a central purpose to the Vedic literature. They think, oh, in the Rig Veda, so many demigods are advocated. There's very little mention of Vishnu. Someone they even count. 200 mentions of Indra in the Rig Veda, only 5 mentions of Vishnu. So where do the Vaishnavas come off of this Vishnu being supreme? You can just make a numerical count in the Rig Veda, and you'll see. But suppose, you had a gathering here, and David Longley was here. Everyone knows he used to be the Prime Minister. So suppose in the gathering, you're talking about your own friends 200, 300 times, and only twice you mention the present Prime Minister of New Zealand, wherever that is. So, does that mean if you add up after the meeting, well, we discussed 200 times names of various my friends, and we only discussed the name of the Prime Minister twice, therefore, the Prime Minister, he's just an ordinary person, he has no higher position. Now, you have to understand qualitatively, not just by making a mathematical count. In the Rig Veda, 200 mentions of Indra, 197 mentions of Varuna, only 5 of Vishnu. So why is Vishnu being taken as supreme? This Hinduism is polytheistic. They accept many gods. You can never figure it all out. Now, in the Rig Veda, it is stated, Om Tat Vishnu Paramam Param Sada Pashanti Surya. The supreme destination is Lord Vishnu. His lotus feet are the supreme destination, and all the demigods, all these suras, they are looking always to the lotus feet of Vishnu, the Param Param, the supreme destination. So anyone with a properly purified brain understands. You may talk about other personalities, Indra, Varuna, whatever, hundreds of times, but just one mention of Param Param, that is different. Supreme destination. So, in order to understand Brahman, the Supreme Absolute Truth, we must become Brahmins. That means purified at least in the mode of goodness. Otherwise, there's no question of understanding Vedic literature. What to speak of understanding Krishna's relationships with the gopis? That is the most confidential knowledge. After Krishna disappeared from the gopis' presence, they became mad in separation of love of Godhead. And they were imitating Krishna's pastimes. In this way, further becoming absorbed in consciousness of Krishna. There's no question of their not being conscious of Krishna. But through all of their various activities and thoughts, Krishna consciousness simply became deeper and deeper for them. So you can read in the Krishna book that gopis imitating the Lord's pastimes. And then the Lord suddenly appeared in their midst. Srila Prabhupada always presents to us the standard of the gopis as the topmost lovers of Krishna, because that is the verdict of Lord Chaitanya. Ranya Kashyapupasana Vrajabhadu Varganan Kalpita. Lord Chaitanya has certified there is no better way of serving Krishna than that demonstrated by the coward damsel of Vraja, the Vrajabhadu. What was their attitude in serving Krishna? They never asked Krishna for anything. Now you might say, maybe they actually wanted to ask the Lord for something. Maybe they really needed something, but they just didn't say it. They were repressing their desires, their requests. No. Not only did they never ask for anything for themselves, they never felt like they needed anything. This is the ideal model of Krishna consciousness. To be satisfied simply in thought of Krishna, in service to Krishna, and never feel that you have to ask the Lord for anything. So Bhishma Dev wants to remember such topmost devotees as he's giving up his body. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami describes that even when the gopis would dress themselves or fix their hair or decorate themselves, they were simply thinking, Krishna will enjoy. He'll be happy by seeing us in this way. Whatever they did was simply to give Krishna pleasure. They never thought of their own pleasure. This is something we should bear in mind in our performance of devotional service. And it's a long road, it seems, how to get to this point. You always catch yourself wondering, where's my pleasure? What's in it for me? How is this situation making me feel? How is this service making me feel? Am I getting enough gratification in terms of appreciation? Am I getting all the things I want out of this service? This is our contamination. The highest standard of devotional service, the gopis, they never thought like that. They simply did everything just for Krishna's pleasure and never thought of their own happiness. This is what plagues and disturbs our devotional service to Krishna. You know, in the first canto of the Bhagavatam, it is stated, Savai Kunsam Paradharma. It's over here, Shijit. Avaititiyapatiyatiyatiyatiyatiyatiyatiyatiyatiyatiyatiyatiyatiyatiyatiyatiyatiyatiyatiyatiyatiyatiyatiyatiyatiyatiyatiyatiyatiyatiyatiyatiyatiyatiyatiyatiyatiyatiyatiyatiyatiyatiyatiyatiyatiyatiyatiyatiyatiyatiyatiyatiyatiyatiyatiyatiyatiyatiyatiyatiyatiyatiyatiyatiyatiyatiyatiyatiyatiyatiyatiyatiyatiyatiyatiyatiyatiyatiyatiyatiyatiyatiyatiyatiyatiyatiyatiyatiyatiyatiyatiyatiyatiyatiyatiyatiyatiyatiyatiyatiyatiyatiyatiyatiyatiyatiyatiyatiyatiyatiyatiyatiyatiyatiyatiyatiyatiyatiyatiyatiyatiyatiyatiyatiyatiyati without interruption and without motive. Now, what causes the interruptions? As soon as we start thinking of our own happiness, then our service interrupts. To push on without interruption in devotional service means you simply do everything for Krishna's pleasure. Then, because there's no hatred, there's no motive, a haityuki, free from motive, free from thinking of your own benefit, there'll be no interruption. Our whole process of devotional service is meant to bring us to that point. And this is what plagues us. This is what disturbs us. That our calculations, how we'll be benefited, are not being fulfilled. We don't see any hope. What's the point of me doing this? What am I going to get out of it? I mean, not in a gross materialistic way, but in a more refined Krishna conscious way. How am I going to be dealt with? How am I going to be treated? How am I going to feel appreciated? This is Arjuna's point in not fighting, in not wanting to fight the battle of Kurukshetra. You'll find the same point, not simply in Gopi Leela. You'll find it in Bhagavad Gita. And if you don't see it in Bhagavad Gita, you won't see it in Gopi Leela. Arjuna was considering his own senses. What's the point of this fighting? What's it going to do for me? Where's the good fortune for me? How's it going to please my senses? Krishna, you're known as Hrishikesh, the master of the senses. So I'm asking you, can't you see there's nothing in this for my senses? You want to know that, you're Hrishikesh. Arjuna wanted to avoid the fighting based on his own version of morality, which was conducive for his own senses. And Krishna said, no. Even though this battle has nothing to do with your fulfillment in the way that you're seeing now. You still fight for me without attachment to victory or defeat. That is the standard of Bhagavad Gita as practiced by Arjuna. At the end, Arjuna said, Krishna, I'll act according to your plan. And we're reading in the purport today how even more elevated than the example of Arjuna is the example of the Gopi. So all these standards of pure devotion are there to enthuse us to go on with the solid process of Bhakti Yoga. Bhakti Yoga has 9 processes. Hearing, chanting, remembering, offering prayers, worshiping the lotus feet, worshiping the deity form of the Lord, becoming a friend of the Lord, surrendering everything. The Nectar Devotion scientifically presents these practices of devotional service. The more we are serious about Bhakti Yoga, the more pure devotional service becomes apparent in our life, although it'll take some time. We want to become solidly situated on the road to go back to Godhead. We've got to put our energies into something. And we all know, if my energies aren't put into something, aren't invested into something, I get very frustrated. I feel useless. Then you sink into the mode of ignorance. You just start laying around lamenting, oh, what's the point of me? Oh, what am I going to do? Who's going to look after me? Who's going to give anything to me? And what's going to be my future? And you just become very weak, and then Maya can easily sweep you away. Oh, you're right. You don't see anything to do in devotional service. You don't see anything to do amongst the devotees. But the material world is a place of opportunity. There you'll be appreciated for your abilities. Just take any job. Join a corporation, work in an office, work in a garage. People will appreciate your skills. Sometimes you hear, how devotees may talk like that. Well, I don't get any appreciation with the devotees, but when I go into, but if I go out into the material world, people will appreciate my skills. There'll be honest dealings. There'll be fairness. There'll be everyone will recognize I have ability. I'll get a systematic promotion higher and higher into the ranks. It's all working like that out there. Not at all. If we allow ourselves to become frustrated in devotional service, then we become fair game for the material energy to drag you into the material world. Maya whispers into your ear that your aspirations will be fulfilled in the world of Tri Guna Mayi, the 3 modes of material nature. Why going through all these austerities with the devotees? Sometimes your service is this, sometimes your service is that. People criticize you without justification. They also praise you without justification. Well, that's all right. We just remember the time when they criticized you without justification. So, all of these things are going on amidst devotees, but things will be more orderly when you have your own peaceful situation away from the devotees. We become weak for those kind of solicitations when we are frustrated in devotional service. And why do we become frustrated in devotional service? Because we have ulterior desires, we have ulterior motives, and then there's an interruption in our service, it actually comes to a halt, and then we're swept away by the material energy, because you must be swept away by something. You've got to invest your energies into something. So Prabhupada's whole life in our Krishna consciousness movement was to demonstrate the super excellence of devotional service and how through austerity and inconvenience after austerity and inconvenience you go on with the wealth of bhakti yoga in the association of devotees. And of course, those of you who are actually working in the material world to support your families, you already know it's no rose garden. It's a fairness. who haven't had that experience, they think that there's a wonderful world of opportunity waiting out there, which you couldn't find amidst the devotees. And in fact, they think the association of devotees keeps you down, it represses your abilities, and out there your abilities just expand. And no. We have to recognize what the root of the frustration is. The root of the frustration is, I want something from Krishna. I have some desire. And because it's not proper, I'm frustrated, and therefore my service reduces. Prabhupada always wanted devotees to feel challenged in devotional service. He said, unless each devotee feels a challenge, he or she won't want to feel motivated to follow the regular principles and follow sadhana bhakti. We all remember that was Prabhupada's forte. Everyone always felt there's a higher level that we should go to. There's a new project we should try for. There's a new way we should give our all in all for Prabhupada's pleasure. And then you begin to think, there's no way we're going to achieve this goal. There's no way we're going to fulfill this challenge unless our spiritual life is sharp and together. That was Prabhupada's psychology. And he said, that's the way it works. You get a service in which you think, there's no way I can do this. And then you think, I'll just have to become Krishna conscious. That was, especially for Westerners, that was Prabhupada's trick. He said it. To give you such a challenging engagement that you feel you've got to get your whole life together in order to do it. To give you something so fascinating to do. So this is not naivete. This is not being sentimental. This is the authorized process, how to become Krishna conscious. You have ambitions, and you have bona fide ambitions and bona fide plans in devotional service, how to please Krishna according to the way Krishna wants to be pleased. And you invest your energy and you adjust your whole life to attain that goal. Whether you're single or a family person, still you're thinking, how can I get my lifestyle, my family situation together so we can push for this goal of rendering service to the Lord? When that kind of thinking is there, then things are automatically exciting. Things are, you're feeling stimulated. You've got life. The requirement to preach is that you have life. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur said that. He who has life preaches. Where does the life come from? You are enthused to want to do something for Krishna, and you're willing to make the changes in your life so that you can do that. Not like, you know, just being sentimental. Yeah, I'd really like to do that for Krishna. No. You read Nectar of Devotion. It's full of how to modify your lifestyle. How to use the processes of devotional service to make a change so that you can achieve that goal. In the early days of the Krishna consciousness movement, having an Ishtadoshi meant discussing Nectar of Devotion. How is Nectar of Devotion being followed in the temple? You go over the offenses to the deity, you go over the offenses to the holy name, you go over the whole process of devotional service and all the scriptural supports of these processes, and see, is it being done in the temple? That was the Ishtadoshi. Are people sitting with their backs to the knees? Are people understanding that devotional service solves all problems? Are they understanding that according to Nectar Devotion? If so, we have a strong temple. If not, we have to do something. Those are Ishtadoshis in the early 70s, the end of the 60s. Maybe not a bad idea. So, Bhishma Dev, he has this wonderful vision of the gopis before he's leaving his body. This is something you don't try for artificially. It comes out of dedication to devotional service. We want to act in such a way that Krishna will want to see us. And Krishna came to see Bhishma Dev at the last moment of his life. And Bhishma Dev was qualified to remember all these different leelas of the Lord. Tomorrow you'll hear about the Rajasuya Yajna. Bhishma Dev was there. He remembers that. Because Yudhisthira had invited not only all the great brahmanas and rishis, even Vyasadeva was there, but Yudhisthira also invited the topmost kshatriyas. And the Bhagavatam describes that Yudhisthira even invited Vaishyas and Shudras to the Rajasthri Yajna, because that's the way of Vedic society. All classes are caught up in devotional service to the Lord through their occupation. So Vishuddhi is able to remember all this. And we want to have our own memories at the time of death, how we try to give everything to Krishna. You know, Prabhupada always emphasized, you don't think of victory or defeat. You just think, Krishna wants this, let's try to give it to Krishna. You don't calculate that if only if there's victory, only if the outcome looks automatic, will I give of myself. No. You try to analyze, what does Krishna want? And then you try to give. And success or failure is actually not the criteria. The criteria is you gave of yourself. This is what Krishna was asking of Arjuna in Bhagavad Gita. We may think, yeah, why shouldn't Arjuna fight? Krishna assured him the battle is already won? Yeah, so what's the big deal? No, Krishna did not want Arjuna to fight with that mentality. That's why he told him, victory or defeat is not your concern. You just be a part. Be a part of what I'm doing. Just because you're the part, you're part of me, you must become part of what I'm doing. So we all need some challenge in devotional service. And that goes for any ashram. We should have a focused program on how we're going to give more to Krishna. And then life becomes very stimulating. Life becomes, our devotional service, our devotional life becomes very peppy. Because that's the way Prabhupada did things. Prabhupada never liked devotees just to remain settled. He was always shaking the rug. And devotees, they loved it. Because they knew by that rug shaking, they're going back to Godhead. They could see it happening. The same thing is still available. Prabhupada has left so many authorized, bona fide ways to plead him, things to do, so we involve ourselves and our families in those programs and go through the austerity and sacrifice of tailoring our lifestyle and our family life so that we can achieve those goals. Then you start to feel that stimulation. You start to feel you're making strides back to Godhead. It's not something just for the sannyasis or the single people. No, for everyone. While, of course, taking care of their necessities, they have to think, how is my family contributing to the overall progress of Krishna consciousness? How can my family members become more absorbed in this? Then life becomes exciting. And you feel that something else has taken over your life. The Christians may call it the Holy Spirit. We call it devotional service. A lot more precise. Being a Hare Krishna means devotional service. It doesn't just mean the neck beads are around the neck. You say Hare Bol. It means you can show someone that I'm doing this kind of service for Krishna. Then you're a Hare Krishna. That service, of course, includes chanting the holy name. Prabhupada would say again and again, we are the devotional service cult. We're not the religious belief cult. We are the organization for rendering service to Krishna's senses with our senses. And the more we enthusiastically take that up, then we'll be qualified at the time of death to remember Krishna. Prabhupada explained that. If a sincere devotee becomes overwhelmed at the time of death by the body biological breakdown, Krishna will force himself into the mind of that devotee because Krishna never forgets a sincere attempt to serve him. So we have all the aces on our side. All that's required is that we become a bit enthusiastic and use our intelligence. Not that we become morose and kind of stymied, what's the use?
my situation, my family situation, or my work situation, or whatever, or my lack of a family will prevent me from, advancing in devotional service. It's just no use in me thinking about it, the way my husband is, the way my wife is, or I don't have a husband, or I don't have a wife. If I did, then I'd be fired up and so on and on and on and on and on and on. This is a symptom of motive action. We were also discussing this last week at the law, how Western civilization is in the mode of passion, ignorance. And what is the symptom of mode of passion? Unlimited desire. Now, the thing is, when you have unlimited desire, you never see that. Everybody in the mode of passion thinks, all I want is just this, and I'll be satisfied. Everybody thinks like that. If I just get this, then it'll be okay. So whenever you talk to somebody and say, you see the symptoms of the mode of passion? Does this sound like you? Well, not exactly. I mean, because I just want certain things. They all say that. I don't want everything, just a few things. But that's the mode of passion. That you just want this. And when you, even if you do get it, you're never satisfied. Then you just want that. So your whole life, you go on. I just want this. But I only have that. On, year after year, this is the mode of passion. Great military commanders say, if I just had Europe, that's all I want. we just can go to the moon, or just go to Mars, that's all we want. Then we'll be satisfied. This is the mode of passion. My esteem, all you want is this. And when you get that, you'll be satisfied. I'm not passionate. I just want this. And you try for that, and even if you get it, you're not satisfied. So all your life, you're just singing this song. I just want this. I just want that. If I only had this, if I only had that. And you gradually get older and older. Your body breaks down. And then you die still thinking, if I only had this, if I only had that. If you're a responsible family man at the time of death, you're thinking, I just want my children situated. That's all I want. I just want to be able to leave them with sufficient income. That's all I want. Up until the time of death, it's like that. And if you're irresponsible materialist, you're thinking, well, I just wanted a few good experiences of pleasure, nice, solid, hedonistic pleasure before I give up this body. That's all I wanted. So this is a song of Maya. All I wanted was, all I want is, if I just had, and no one can see, this is the mode of passion. Because in the mode of passion, you can't see. Illumination, vision begins in subgloom. Then you can start to see a little bit, comparatively, to the transcendental plane. But forget it. When you're in the mode of passion, you can't understand what's going on. And the mode of ignorance is even more perverse. The mode of ignorance means everything's upside down. You think you see, and you see the opposite. You take religion to be irreligion, and irreligion to be religion. In the mode of passion, you just make mistakes after one mistake after another. In the mode of ignorance, you're so bewildered that you think up is down and down is up. So no question of seeing when you're under the influence of passion and ignorance. That should give us all further incentive to make sure we're at least solidly situated in goodness. And how do you become immediately solidly situated in goodness? Just by hearing about Krishna. Just by chanting about Krishna. Then at least you're in goodness. Prabhupada said, mode of goodness, immediately attained, follow the story of the person. Any questions? Yes.
As you were mentioning how Prabhupada used to give the buddies excitement and a challenge, a new project, something. Isn't that the motivation as well?
No. Devotional service, given by Krishna, given by Krishna's representative, is beyond the three modes of nature. Even in our faulty, even we may not apply ourselves in the perfect way, but still the devotional service. These authorized programs coming down into civil succession, they are transcendental opportunities to invest our energies. Everything can be used in devotional service, even lust. Nathandas Thakur says, Kam Krishna Kam Arpane. You should be very lusty to use everything in the service of the Lord. just like when you're on Sanger time. You should be looking around those towns, since you don't like the city of Austin, when you're doing the towns, you should be just looking with lust. So many opportunities to serve Krishna, so many people here who need books. This is the lusty vision of a devotee. They only, and even when they say they all have books, you're thinking, do they have a set? And when they all have a set, you're thinking, how many sets do they have? They need to take Jerry Gamma set too, and this way things go on and on. So, devotional service is full. Lust is there. Lust to serve Krishna senses. So our point is, without that lust to serve Krishna senses, you've got no protection against the lust of the material world. Therefore, it's very important that devotees feel motivated in seeing. It's very important that they see how they can give their energies to Krishna. And then they'll get motivated. Then they'll conquer passion and ignorance. Yes.
Sometimes the devotee would get into an activity and be fired up for a while, and then he gets fired up about another devotional activity. Is that the motivation?
That's why we need guidance. We need to take some advice from old hands who've been around for a while and can tell you, we've seen this before. We ourselves went through that too, and there's a better way how to do things. Anything you try to do for Krishna will always have some impediments. Prabhupada was very firm about that. He once said, as soon as you, he said, this world is so constructed that as soon as you try to do something good, immediately there's an impediment. Accept it. But he said, although most people will quit when the impediment comes, the real devotee keeps pushing ahead. And that's how the empowerment comes from Krishna. Accept the impediment, but what separates the men from the boys and the girls from the women? So those who gotta be careful these days. Those who push ahead even after the impediments. That's why Prabhupada would give such inducements. So I remember I was a young devotee. We heard Prabhupada say, anyone who goes to preach East in New York gets a special dust in the lotus feet. So, you know, devotee gets a year like this, and we'll go for it. And that kind of striving protects you, especially in your 20s when the, when you're in your 20s, a little passion is really bouncing around, So when you've got a vision like that, to go for the special dust of the lotus feet, that keeps you out of Maya. So instead of looking back and thinking, how I wasted my youth in such misery, in Eastern Europe, when nobody wanted to go there, it was horrible, I wasted my whole youth, No, you think, if I hadn't have done that, I know what I would have been doing. Don't talk about it. If I hadn't taken my energies in that way, I have just been swimming in an ocean of material desires. So, the old timers say, that was Prabhupada's expertise. He could just create challenges in Krishna's service, and he wanted his leaders to do the same thing, so that devotees would see a way to give their energies to Krishna. And then, of course, we have to keep our enthusiasm to pursue those goals, because the going is not always easy. Yes.
Well, you mentioned that, and that if they have an enlightenment or something comes in the mode of goodness, sometimes you understand that most people are not fixed in the mode of goodness. The kshatriyas are predominantly passion or vicious passion and so on. Do they, can you explain what that means? Do they have to change their tradition or modes or
in Vedic culture, the whole civilization is predominated by a very sweet relationship between the Brahmanas and the Kshatriyas. The Brahmanas see the Kshatriyas implement, they carry things out. The Brahmanas are the eyes, the head, the Kshatriyas are the arms. So although the Kshatriyas generally are said to be situated in the mode of passion, they rely on the vision of the Brahmanas. That's the whole point. All the parts of the body are working together. All the parts of the body are needed. Even the legs are needed. It's just that qualitatively you understand the head is most essential, but all parts of the body are required. So, in order for Vedic civilization to be there has to be this reciprocal relationship between the Brahmanas and the Kshatriyas. between the spiritual intellectuals guiding society and the executive government. There must be that relationship. And of course, the Kshatriyas that you read about in the Bhagavatam, like Yudhisthira and Prithvi, they were Darshi. Prabhupada always said that actually Shukadeva Goswami and Prithvi Maharaj are equally spiritually qualified. Although Prithvi Maharaj is the retired emperor of the world, and Shukadeva Goswami was so petty that he didn't even wear clothes, both were equal on the spiritual plane. So that is the Rajarshi. And Vedic culture is meant to be guided by Rajarshis, but at least every Kshatriya takes guidance from the Brahmins, and therefore the influence of the mode of passion is kept in bounds.
What is that position? And do they, just by following the Dharma, so they automatically qualified, or do they have to take, the idea is you have to take birth in the higher modes in the next life, or is that enough, or does it work?
Today, or for who?
Well, just as a general understanding, a lot of people are very much, you know, motivated by the mode of passion, and they work in the mode of passion. Do they actually have to change that mode of work? Is it enough just to do that for Krishna? And the direction of how to reach his
own. It depends on how serious we are to be Vaishnavas. That was Prabhupada's point. If you are serious to be a Vaishnava, that means to be transcendental, then you take up the process appropriately. Still, Prabhupada at the end of his appearance in this world was saying, even the transcendental Vaishnavas should have a particular way of acting in this world according to Vedic Dharma, so they can set an example. And then he said, actually, most persons coming to Krishna consciousness don't seem to be transcendental, therefore it is, from all points of view, good they take up a particular station. But even if you are transcendental, Prabhupada's point was you take up a particular Vedic mode of acting to set the example so that others can see your example and become stabilized in their own life. So if you're actually a Vaishnava, which all facility is given to be a Vaishnava, then you actually are beyond the three modes of material nature. And even and if you are chanting your 16 rounds properly and following the regular principles, following nectar devotion properly, then at least actually you're in mode of goodness. But still you can act in other ways, just teach others. These things are very, not complicated, but they're very deep, profound issues. It's good to think about them. Yes?
Is it true that to create something you have to be patient?
To create what kind of thing?
That's one example. If you have a project and you want it to get happening, you know, get it going, make it.
Are you talking about Krishna consciousness?
Yeah.
Okay. For Krishna consciousness to happen, you have to be Krishna conscious. You can't just run around like, you know, okay, here's an example of mode of passion. You're running around with like a chicken with a head cut. They just give me books, they just give me books. Now they're all demons, they're going to get out there and push those books down their throats. Book distribution, be tired. After 3 hours of ranting or anything like that, you just fall asleep in the ashram after having a big feast. Where's the ice cream? That's mode of passion approach to something that's pure.
The like for example
now the actual proper approach is Prabhupada said that the book distribution is the most pleasing activity for him. I'm gonna figure out how to make lifelong plans to do that. Prabhupada said don't even worry about wars or catastrophes. He said whoever said that there'd be an interruption to book distribution because of war or catastrophe, said this is nonsense. Make lifelong plans to be secure making lifelong plans. So a proper approach to book distribution is how can I order my life so that day after day I can go on with enthusiasm. That's the difference.
The motive of materialistic motivational speakers, they talk about having a fire in the stomach, a fire in the heart.
You take a lot of chili.
Like having some sort of drive, but you're talking about the challenge before.
That's okay, that fire in the heart comes when you take the order of the spiritual masters, your life is whole. You can read this year's Vyasa-Guru's book. You'll see so many offerings which talk about that mystic potency from taking the order of the Guru as a life and soul. Any other questions? Yes? Is beyond the modes of nature. But if we're not diligent in our execution, or if we're not conscientious, we can feel rocked by the modes. And we can feel rocked by them so much that we actually identify with them. Prabhupada gave the example of it's like being in a rowboat, and the waves are rocking the boat, although they're not actually touching you. If you're actually following this program fully, you may feel the waves rocking the boat, but they won't touch you. But if you don't follow the program fully, then you're out in the waves. So as you progress more and more, even though the waves may be rocking the boat, gradually you'll notice it dies down. And you feel solidly situated in the boat of devotional service. But if you're not following the process and nectar of devotion, then you're not going to be in the boat, you're going to be out in the ocean. And one last question.